So the Buddha, having said so much, having told so many parables, the effect of all this begins to be felt by the audience or by the assembly at large, and more of the disciples come forward. They confess their own shortcomings, their own limited understanding, and they announce their acceptance of this new teaching. And in this way, Purna, a monk called Purna, and five other distinguished arahants are predicted to supreme Buddhahood, and they too give expression to their feelings by means of a parable. And this is the parable of the drunken man and the priceless jewel. And we'll be dealing with this parable in Lecture 7 under the title of The Jewel in the Lotus. So as time goes on, more and more disciples are predicted by the Buddha to perfect Buddhahood, and in fact all the Hinayana disciples are eventually converted. They all decide to aspire for supreme enlightenment as bodhisattvas. So the Buddha at this point turns to all the bodhisattvas present, that is, those who were bodhisattvas from the beginning, and he impresses on them the importance of the White Lotus Sutra and the necessity for its preservation. And he explains that the whole text should be read, recited, copied, expounded, and even ceremonially worshipped. And all the bodhisattvas promise to protect the sutra. Now at this point, we come to the most dramatic scene in the whole of the White Lotus Sutra. As they're all sitting there, something very strange happens. From the earth, apparently from the depths of the earth, there springs up a stupa, and it towers right up into the sky. A stupa of stupendous size and unbelievable magnificence. Now, what is a stupa? Some of you may be wondering. We're going to learn in detail what a stupa is in Lecture 6 on Five Element Symbolism and the Stupa. But for the present, it'll suffice to say that a stupa is a sort of reliquary. It's a monument containing, at least theoretically, relics, body relics, fragments of bone and so on, of the Buddha or his disciples. Originally, at the very beginning, following even a pre-Buddhistic practice, the stupa was just a great heap or mound of earth, a sort of tumulus, if you like. Later on, it came to be constructed of brick and stone. But this stupa, the text says, the White Lotus Sutra says, this stupa, which appears springing out of the earth and towers up into the sky, which is so enormous and so magnificent, this stupa is constructed not of brick, not of stone, not even of marble, but of the seven precious things of gold, silver, crystal, lapis lazuli, and so on. And it's very, very beautifully decorated with flags and flowers and so on. And the whole stupa emits light in all directions. It emits fragrance in all directions, and also music. So one can just imagine the scene. There are all these astonished disciples. Only the Buddha isn't astonished. And this enormous stupa towering from the earth into the sky, made of these seven precious things, beautifully decorated and sending forth light and fragrance and music in all directions of space. And not only that, from the midst of the stupa, there comes forth a thunderous voice. And this voice praises the Buddha. That is to say, Shakyamuni Buddha. Shakyamuni Buddha is sometimes called our Buddha, as he appeared in our world. And this great voice, this thunderous voice, praises the Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha, for preaching the White Lotus Sutra and bears witness to the truth of everything that he has said. Now all the disciples present are absolutely agog. They want to know what it all means. What is the significance? Whose is the voice? Whose is the stupa? And so on. So the Buddha explains that this stupa contains the whole preserved body of a very, very ancient Buddha called Abundant Treasures. That's the translation of his name in Sanskrit. And the Buddha further explains that Abundant Treasures lived millions upon millions upon millions of years ago. And during his lifetime he made a vow. And his vow was that after his death, his stupa, the monument in which his remains were enshrined, would spring forth wherever the White Lotus Sutra was being expounded. And not only that, but that he himself would bear testimony to the truth of the teaching. So the whole assembly is very impressed by this explanation, and they ask if it isn't possible for the stupa to be opened so that they can see the body of this ancient Buddha, Abundant Treasures, miraculously preserved after millions and millions of years. But the Buddha says this isn't very easy. There are other conditions to be fulfilled. He says Abundant Treasures has another vow. And according to this vow, his body in the stupa, his preserved body, can only be seen under certain conditions. And these conditions have to be fulfilled by the Buddha himself, by Shakyamuni the Buddha. And the condition in this case is that he, Shakyamuni, must cause all the Buddhas who have ever emanated from him and who are preaching the doctrine throughout the universe to return to him and assemble together in one place. This is the great condition. So in compliance with that condition, Shakyamuni sends out a great ray of light. And this ray of light illumines the Buddha fields, the universes where Buddhas are preaching, in all the 10 directions of space, so that the whole assembly once more can see the Buddhas in these far distant worlds. So when this light from Shakyamuni Buddha penetrates to all these other thousands and tens of thousands of worlds and their Buddhas, the Buddhas there understand. It's a sort of signal. They know what is wanted. They know what is expected of them. So they tell their own bodhisattvas that now I've got to go on a journey, thousands, millions of miles across the universe, to the other side of the universe, as it were, a journey to the Saha world. That's our world. In Buddhism, each world has got a name. Each Buddha world, each universe has got a name. And our world, our universe, is called the Saha world, which means the world of endurance, the world in which there's much to be endured. Because amongst all the worlds, ours, we are told in the Buddhist scriptures, is not a particularly good one. It doesn't stand very high in the list of worlds, qualitatively speaking. There are lots of other worlds and universes with Buddhas and Bodhisattvas where conditions are very much better than they are in our own world. This is a world of suffering, of endurance. So it's called the Saha world. So the Buddhas in these other distant worlds tell their bodhisattvas that they've got to go on this journey, this trip, to this distant little world, not a particularly nice one, in a distant corner of the universe called the Saha world, because Buddha Shakyamuni has sent for them. So Buddha Shakyamuni, as it were, doesn't like that these incoming Buddhas from all over the universe should see the imperfections of his own little universe. So he purifies the Saha world, the sutra says, for the reception of all these Buddhas, and the whole earth is transformed into brilliant blue light, into, as it were, lapis lazuli. Everything, as it were, dissolves into a ground of brilliant, clear blue light. And this ground of clear, brilliant, pure light is crossed, is crisscrossed with golden cords, stretching hundreds, thousands of miles in different directions, so that the whole brilliant blue ground is marked off into squares. And inside all these squares, we're told, there spring up beautiful jewel trees. And these jewel trees, which are described at great length in many scriptures, are like trees, but they're made entirely of jewels. Their trunk, branches, leaves, flowers, fruits are all made entirely of jewels. and they're hundreds and thousands of feet tall. And then we are told, all the gods and men in the world, in this universe, other than those actually belonging to the assembly, are transferred elsewhere. We're not told precisely where, but they're sort of bundled out of the way. And all the villages in the world, all the towns, the cities, the mountains and the rivers and the forest, they all disappear. So you've got a perfect, a purified, a transfigured world left. This brilliant blue ground, crisscrossed with golden cords and the jewel trees springing up in the squares. And the whole earth, we are told, smokes with sweet-smelling incense. And the whole ground is covered and strewn with all sorts of heavenly flowers. And the preparations are barely complete when 500 Buddhas instantly arrive from their own universes in different directions of space, and each Buddha is attended by a great Bodhisattva. And they all take their seats on magnificent lion thrones underneath 500 magnificent jewel trees. And such is the scale of things that with the arrival of these 500 Buddhas, all the available space is already taken up, and the Buddhas themselves have hardly begun to arrive. So what does Buddha Shakyamuni do? He hastily purifies, the sutra says, untold millions of worlds in all the eight directions of space. And all of these, as soon as they're purified, are occupied by the streams of incoming Buddhas, who all take seats beneath innumerable jewel trees. And they all pay their respects to the Buddha Shakyamuni by offering a double handful of jewel flowers. So when they're all gathered there, and all these Buddhas with attendant bodhisattvas, there must be millions of them, are all gathered together in one place, the conditions laid down by abundant treasures are fulfilled, and the Buddha himself, Shakyamuni, rises, floats up into the sky, level with the great door of the stupa. And he draws back the bolt, and he flings open the door with a sound again like thunder, and the ancient Buddha, abundant treasures, is seen sitting cross-legged within. And even though his body is millions upon millions of years old, it's perfectly preserved, perfectly intact, and he's seated cross-legged as though in meditation. And seeing this sight, the assembly is, of course, struck with awe. And they scatter, they throw handfuls, heaps of jewel flowers over the two Buddhas. So abundant treasures isn't dead, apparently. His body's perfectly preserved, he's still alive after millions upon millions of years, and he speaks, and he invites the Buddha Shakyamuni to come and share his throne, to sit down beside him. This is highly symbolical, highly meaningful, but we can't go into it now. You may perhaps have just a glimpse of the meaning. And this scene is very often depicted in Chinese Buddhist art. The two Buddhas seated side by side within the stupa, sharing one and the same lion throne. So there is the scene. There's this enormous stupa towering up into the sky, and the two Buddhas now seated in the midst of it, side by side, with all the congregation, as it were, all these millions of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas on a lower level. But the whole congregation, the whole assembly, looking up into the sky, looking up at the stupa, looking up at the two Buddhas, Abundant Treasures and Buddha Shakyamuni, desire to be raised up, lifted up to the same level. So we are told that the Buddha puts forth his supernormal powers, and all the assembly, all the Buddhas, all the Bodhisattvas, millions upon millions of them, are lifted up into the air to the same level as Abundant Treasures and Shakyamuni himself.